I'm like a dog with a bone now. I will not take no for an answer. I'll make sure something gets done. So I did it, and it was the hardest decision I've made to date. If you really have given it your 100% and you've improved, you've done the 1% improvement, all of that stuff, there is no way that it can't work out or that it's going to change your life in some way. When you're making it a lot of money, if you haven't figured it out by then the losses and the hits are huge. If you are spending without thinking, you've got to know where you are to decide where you're going to go.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to First Things Thirst. Very happy to have my guest this evening, Nisha. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I know you're very selective with which podcast you go on, so I appreciate you saying yes to the invite.
Of course.
How's things?
Doing well. You're great to be here. Very happy to be visiting. It's been good.
It's interesting because you came on my radar, I think it was a year ago or maybe a little bit earlier. There's this one video, I think it's your most popular video on YouTube, borderline viral. It's got like 8 million views.
Right.
Every time I went onto my Explore page, YouTube was pushing it towards me. And I was like, I don't want to watch this. I want to watch this other thing. And it kept being shown in my face. I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch this video. And I watched it. And I was like, wow. I was very impressed. And then I went and checked out all the other videos, and it was a breath of fresh air, I think.
Yeah, coming from a female person in finance. Yeah. I get that a lot.
So what is your background?
I did finance at university.
Just straight up finance?
Finance, accounting, management.
Did you do it because you wanted to do it, or it was like, oh, I probably should do this because everyone's saying it's a good thing to do?
The degree? So I came from a background where, well, with my family, we've become comfortable now, but we don't have the stay-at-home kind of money. It's not stay-at-home daughter. You could do whatever you want. You could follow your dreams, your passions, your desires. No, I had to make money. Mm-hmm. And so I always joke about it with my parents. I say, okay, when I will know that I'm really rich when my children can do whatever degree they want. They could choose whatever they want to do. But for me, I had certain degrees that were available to me and certain jobs that were available, which was finance and accounting or something in that field, doctor or lawyer. So I was like, cool, I have three to choose from. Let me pick one. Finance it was. And that is essentially why I did my degree and then fell into the path that I fell into later.
Where did you study?
Nottingham University.
Oh, I nearly went there, you know.
Where did you go?
I went to Newcastle.
Okay.
Nottingham was the first choice, but I needed two A's and a B.
Yeah.
But I got an A and two B's.
So you had your backup.
Yeah. Newcastle was good.
Any regrets? Wish you went to Nottingham?
I don't know. I think the path which I took, where I inevitably ended up not doing very well with the degree that I chose because I just didn't study hard enough, has kind of led me to the path which I've followed, which turned out pretty good. So I wonder if my grades had been better, would that have meant that I would have then, you know, come out of university with a first and then gone down that route of applying for a job with a big corporation or company and then maybe being sort of stuck.
What did you study at university?
Economics and business management.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've never worked for a corporation or a company?
No.
You fell straight into personal training?
Yes. Well, doing a few bits and bobs here and there.
Okay.
Did a bit of modeling, working as a club promoter, working at Hollister as a manager for a year and a half.
Okay.
Then got into the gym thing. But I think for me, I noticed when I was studying, if I'm trying to learn something that I'm not really that passionate about, it's kind of hard to make it stick. Mm. And, you know, even when I went to school and I did my GCSEs and A-levels, I really did work hard to get good grades. And I did get good grades. But it was like I went to university and it's like, oh, so we've got to do this all over again. Mm. Like, for what?
So you never really wanted to go down the finance route, but you chose it.
No, but in hindsight, I feel as though being more financially literate from an earlier age would have been a lot more beneficial. Because throughout my 20s, I didn't really understand anything about money. Like nothing, which I guess was the complete opposite for you. Like when you came out of university, you feel like actually I know quite a lot now about the way the world works, money, finance, taxes.
Honestly, very little. I think my degree in itself, the degree itself gave me the basics, but everything I learned about money came after that. It came through my ACA qualification, which I learned a lot more of the details, and then just being in finance and having an interest in it. Mm-hmm. But up until school, just it's not even taught.
Yeah, obviously, school is not teaching you anything about disregard that.
University, not so much, but more about the financial markets and the financial field. But the money itself came when I was working in banking and just being surrounded by people who had a lot of money, and we were just talking about money all the time. Yeah. And so when you're completely surrounded by that, surrounded by everyone who's working in finance or some sort of financial related field, you cannot ignore it.
Yeah.
But it's so important because it touches every part of your life. Finances, it dictates where you could travel to, what school you go to, what groceries you buy, what house you live in.
Stress.
Quality of life. Mm-hmm. Just freedom. Every part of your life, money touches. So you've just got to care about it. And for me, luckily I also found an interest in it as well. Mm-hmm. So it was both. Usually people just think of finance and they're like, oh, this is so boring, just switch off. And that's where I'm like, okay, I find it interesting. Maybe I could turn it around in a way that other people can find it interesting.
Yeah. I guess that's how you ended up making content eventually.
Eventually, yeah.
Well, but before that, you did 3 years.
I did 3 years in as a degree.
Yeah,
3 years in finance, accounting, management to do the degree.
And then what did you do after that?
And then I worked for 9 years in banking. Whilst in the first 3 years of those 9 years, I also did my ACA qualification, so accountancy, mm-hmm. and then spent those 9 years working in investment banking. Yeah, so I just came alive like last year when I quit. Yeah. It was a long journey, but...
Which company did you work for?
Three banks. Started off at Deutsche Bank, mm-hmm. then moved to SMBC, which is a Japanese bank, and then joined another bank for 5 days before I resigned.
How did you find the early stages, like the first couple of months when you're working for this company? Did you fit in well, or was there discrimination? Was there any problems, or was it all right?
With Deutsche, which is where I started my career, it was a completely different life. It's like I've lived two lives up mm-hmm. until now, but there is some glitz and glamour to it, definitely. You're wining and dining clients, you're going to these extravagant events at hotels, you're going to offsites and exotic locations, all being paid for. So there is an allure to it in your early 20s, but that does come with hard work. Mm-hmm. And it was the hard work side of it that I didn't enjoy. I didn't find fulfilling. I know there's a lot of thing about discrimination. Personally, there were definitely far fewer females on the floor. That I could tell. But there were towards the end when I was going to resign, I saw people in senior positions where I wanted to be, women of color, different backgrounds. So it was towards the end shifting. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a quota, and there are still so many things that are happening to try and get more females at the top.
Mm.
I didn't find that there was much discrimination for me. So in that sense, I feel very lucky, although I know there are other people who have felt completely differently with their experience. But
you know, I think a lot of people, especially the youngsters who are looking to make money these days, they don't have that experience of working in a corporate background, which I think does teach you some valuable skills. There's a lot of youngsters who, you know, whether they go into content creation or making money online, they're doing this in their bedroom. So they're missing out on learning a lot of these essential skills, which are going to help you later on in life, which I imagine you being surrounded by all these really intelligent, experienced, successful people, no doubt helped you a lot. And you just absorbed everything like
for
a sponge.
Sure. And it taught me the discipline. I'm like a dog with a bone now. I will not take no for an answer. I would make sure something gets done. It taught me the sense of urgency, mm-hmm. which banking and, usually has.
Punctuality as well.
Yeah. All of that does not come with working for yourself right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And also on top of that, you're making money. So everything that you try, you could throw money at and say, okay, that gives it a better chance to succeed. So all the side hustles, all the things I had going on. When I started my YouTube channel, I think within like the first 2 months, I bought a £1,500 camera. Most people wouldn't be able to do that if they're just starting out. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But I was earning enough from my day job that I could just throw it into other things to experiment. And so I always think that if you're starting off anything, before you just jump in straight away without having any income coming towards it, use your day job, slug it out, even if you don't enjoy it, but use the money you're earning from there to throw into the other stuff and try out as many things as you can, to employ as many people as you can before jumping into anything. It just gives you that safety net. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what I did. All the 9 years is a long time. I totally get that. But when I did resign, I had like a 9 months worth of emergency fund that I could just fall back on, which
I think anybody who's thinking about making a transition with their career paths, they kind of need that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What was it that made you want to move away from it? Because I imagine things were going pretty good, at least financially.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was the one thing was that the work was not exciting and fulfilling me whatsoever. Mm. And I'd got to a point where I was between two banks and I had 3 months off. And I said to myself, let me just take this YouTube thing seriously. I've tried it out. I've put a video here and there for the last couple of weeks. So up until like 6 months before that, I'd put in a video every now and then. I thought, okay, I'm going to do this full time and see where it takes me. So I gave myself 3 months, and then about 2 months and 28 days in, nothing had happened. I had like 300 subscribers, was about to join my new bank.
How many videos?
Must have been like 20 something in my 20s. But I gave it my all. I gave it my all. There was nothing that I could have turned around and said, oh, I didn't try. I put in everything I could. And I thought, okay, this isn't for me. Back into banking I go. Start making the money that I always knew I had to make in banking. And then one of my videos picked up, went viral, and the rest of the channel went with it. So I was getting 1,000 subscribers a day, 4,000, 5,000. And by the end of the week, I had 40,000 subscribers in my first week of having joined this new bank. So at that point, I knew I couldn't do both. And I had a sign-on, a guarantee bonus of £100,000 at this bank, mm-hmm. that I had to stay for 2 months at least to get that in my bank account. So on one side, I had the six-figure bonus and doing something that I've done for the last 9 years and I'll continue to do for the next 30 years. Or I have this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The boat's just pulled out in front of me. I either jump on or I watch it sail into the distance without mm-hmm. me. I had my emergency fund. So even if this boat capsized, I still had my life vest. But at the time, I was taking an 80% pay cut to do this full time.
Yeah.
And I thought,
that's always the scariest thing.
It's the scariest part. But I was so unfulfilled. And what I was doing through YouTube and these comments and these people, real people with real aspirations saying stuff, mm-hmm. I thought, you know what? I'll just do it. I don't care. I'm not going to be homeless. I've got my income covered. I've got my fixed living expenses covered. At that point, I knew my fixed living expenses would already be taken care of and I'll be a lot happier. Mm-hmm. So I did it, and it was the hardest decision I've made to date, making it at that time and saying goodbye to my six-figure bonus, which I spent like months negotiating.
Yeah. I think so many people are stuck continuing to stay in this career which they have or the job which they have because of that. Just the uncertainty of not knowing, oh, is this going to work or is this not going to work?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you had a lot of self-belief? Like, was there something which you thought, no, I know I can do this?
I knew that with the way I was treating it and with how much effort and focus I was putting into it, I thought, something's got to happen. There is no way I could put in this amount of effort, this amount of time, this amount of focus and not get anything back. Mm-hmm. And I think that applies for everything that you do in life. If you really have given it your 100% and you've improved, you've done the 1% improvement, all of that stuff, there is no way that it can't work out or that it's going to change your life in some way or you're going to learn something from it.
Yeah.
But towards the end, part of me was like, I could still do this. If I still continued it will blow up. But I've got my job to go back to now and I can't do both. Mm-hmm. So this is my point to say, or this is my message or something the universe is basically telling me, stay in banking.
Yeah. And I guess the great thing about the position that you had is that you had all this knowledge and experience from the, say, 9 years.
Yeah.
So you're in a position where you have a lot to offer and you have an authority in a particular topic. And that, I guess, shows. And there seems to be a lack of information regarding all these videos which you're making because they're clearly getting views. Like all this stuff I'm looking at, I'm like, none of it is in school. Like none of it is in university. It's so like simplified and easy to digest.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's so, I've simplified it, but it should be easily accessible, mm-hmm. but it's not. And I think a lot of people try to create content on a specific topic, but without having the education or the experience.
Yeah. Especially the younger you are as well. It's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you find that from all the content you've made and the videos which have performed the best, what do you feel like people struggle with the most when it comes to finances?
I think it's they know that a higher level, that, oh, I need to be good at managing my money. I need to be good at saving. I need to be good at making. But nothing's really taught about the intricate details of it. Like, okay, you're telling me to save my money in an emergency fund. Where do I save it? Or you're telling me to invest. What do I set up? How do I even set up an investment account? So it's when it gets to the details, because there's so much information out there, Google ISO account and you get so many hits. Mm-hmm. Although there's a handful of them, you still find so much information. You don't know where to start. So people get stuck in analysis paralysis when they try to do it themselves. And that's where everything just goes wrong. I'd rather not do anything than get stuck in all this information.
Yeah. I think for me, not being financially literate when I was younger, I never really paid too much attention to taxes.
Yeah.
And particularly because I think to begin with, when I had a paycheck, you know, it was almost unavoidable. But then when I started moving towards personal trainer, there was a lot of cash involved, and then things weren't necessarily done by the books. I wasn't tracking anything. And then it got to the point where I'd made the transition where, same thing, focused on building my YouTube. My revenue blew up, but I had no financial literacy and no understanding of the actual importance of making sure that you are tracking everything and paying your taxes. Because, you know, when you're getting money from all like online revenue streams, you just think, hey, this is my money, so I can do what I want with it. But in reality, especially if you're in the UK, there's a pretty big chunk of that needs to go to the tax man.
Yeah. And you only found that out towards the end when you had to pay the tax.
It got to the point where I was like, I have a feeling I should be paying some taxes. And I'm probably going to get into trouble soon, especially because it got to the point where I was making these YouTube videos and I wasn't being flashy, but you could just see, okay, this guy's living a good life.
Yeah.
So if anyone who was working for the HMRC watching my videos, he'd be like, oh, this guy seems to be doing all right. Let's have a little bit of an investigation to see what his finances are like. And they would have obviously found nothing on the books. So I was like, okay, I don't want this to happen. So I think this is one of the great things about social media and having a bit of a following. I started getting people messaging me asking if I needed any help with paying taxes or doing their accounts.
Yeah.
And I was like, That's a very good idea. I think I actually do need some help. So it's like a legit accounting firm. I think it's called Walgi & Co. They got in touch, reached out, went through everything, and they were like, oh my God, like we need to sort all of this out immediately because you're going to get yourself into trouble. So luckily they went back a couple of years, sorted everything out. And even though obviously it costs a bit of money to hire good accountants, but you know, you want that peace of mind.
Yeah.
And especially when you're earning more money, you know, the bigger the fines, the higher the risk of getting into trouble.
You've got to be better at managing your money, like right from the get-go, because even when you're making a lot of money, if you haven't figured it out by then the losses and the hits are huge.
Yeah.
Making money mistakes when you're earning maybe, I don't know, 10,000, 20,000 as a student doesn't hurt so bad. Mm-hmm. It might feel bad at the time, but then you learn the lessons then, so you're not going to make it later on the line. Did you set up your business as a company from the start, or do you remember?
From the start, I don't think so, no.
Yeah, that would have been a lot of time.
What have you got, any tips for, I guess, more so the youngsters that are listening to this, or maybe they're starting up their company, when it comes to paying taxes and actually finding good accountants?
When you're the number one thing when you're looking for an accountant is find someone who has experience in the field that you're in. And I don't say this lightly. My parents had an accountant for 25 years, just recently they changed. And I asked them, this accountant was making so many mistakes. And I was saying to them, why are you still with this accountant? They were like, oh, because he does everyone's. I'm like, but that's the issue. He does everyone's. He's not specialized in anything. But just by choosing an accountant that's in your field, creator or real estate or whatever you're doing, just by virtue of them speaking to so many other people in the field, they'll be able to pick up things that you might not necessarily know, or you might not even come across, even if it's not related to accounting. Mm-hmm. So they might say, okay, you're buying a commercial and residential together. You don't actually have to pay this stamp duty. It's a smaller percentage for you, but that's not accounting. That's just them having worked with so many other people and seeing the reports and the files that they could advise on that. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing, their experience, obviously the qualification or word of mouth, or just making sure that they're reliable based on other people that you've worked with.
Yeah.
I think the best way is to go through word of mouth, and also someone who has a in-house tax advisor. So I think that's what people often get mixed up on is they think that the accountant can give a lot of tax advice, but they're two different people. And often you have to get, depending on how difficult the structure is or how complex the structure is, you'll often have to get another tax person on board. If it's in-house, it's easy for them to communicate and get it all sorted out.
Mm.
Yeah. So working with a company where it's all in one.
Do you know what I found was interesting as well? So obviously I was working with them and the tax bill, which I was getting increasingly higher and higher, you know, the more money I was earning. And then I took a few trips to Dubai and I thought, oh, I actually quite like it here. And I remember when I had initially planned to come out here just for a couple of months and I got hit with a massive tax bill. And I was like, I don't want to be paying
this. In Dubai or?
No, so this was from, everything was still based in the UK. So I was paying UK tax, but then it was getting to the point where I was barely in the UK because I did so much traveling.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this doesn't make sense. Like, right. I'm paying a lot of money. So I said, oh, well, what options do I have? And they kind of went into the basics of, you know, where you could potentially relocate if you want to reduce your tax bill. And I thought, you know what, I'll make a decision. I'll come to Dubai. And then I was like, right, okay, so do this all for me. And they were like, okay. But they didn't have a huge amount of expertise when it came to relocating, you know, overseas,
yeah,
and the whole process of being able to do that. And, you know, you have to give up your UK residency,
yeah,
which is something which I had to do. And I think they spotted a trend of people like me who were leaving the UK, relocating, particularly in Dubai. So they actually built an entirely new department which would focus on expats moving to Dubai. So I think I was one of the first people to do that. And because of that, they built a team around it, and now that's like a huge part of their business.
I hope they're giving you free accounting services.
Oh yeah, so they I ended up doing a video which was like a, I think I'd been in Dubai for 3 years at that point.
Yeah,
so it was an honest review of living in Dubai for the past 3 years. Anyway, for whatever reason, that video got like 2 million views. Unfortunately, because I said to the guy, I was like, look, I'm going to talk about tax a little bit, so I can refer you guys, but give me a link, give me like an affiliate link,
nice,
and then we can work together. Anyway, that video did so well that I'm continually to get paid every month because I've given them so much business.
Yeah.
But they can only work with people who are in the UK that have moved, who plan to move to Dubai.
Bye.
So obviously it's, I think there's a really good YouTube channel called Nomad Capitalist,
okay,
who specializes in, you know, relocating and what to do with your money when you're earning lots of it and where to move it, position it and everything. So as you said, experience of an accountant,
yeah,
plays a big part.
Yeah, exactly. They, yeah, knew what they were. Well, I think they, the first company that was, that you were working with, whatever the accountancy firm was, probably learned so much through doing it just with you.
Yeah.
That they're now great for other people as well.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. When it comes to, I think when you get to the point where you're starting to do better and you're earning more money, do you have like a framework or an approach where you put percentages away, percentages for like spending, investing, things like that?
Yeah. Typically, the guideline is take 50 to 60% of your take-home pay should be going towards your fixed needs. So this includes things like groceries, rent or mortgage, transportation, utilities, bills. Then 20 to 30% should be going towards your spending, things that aren't essential to you living, but they make your life that much better. Mm-hmm. So going out, dining out, drinks, extra clothes above and beyond what you need. And then 10 to 20%, minimum 10%, you want to aim for the higher end if you can, savings and investments.
Mm-hmm.
That's the recommended guideline. I don't like saying you should only spend 20% on your house or 10% on your car, because I feel like that could be quite restrictive and different people have different priorities. You might want to spend more on your home, for example, yeah, and less on something else. So you could be flexible within those subcategories, but as long as together they are fitting those recommended percentages, you're in a good place. And whatever it is, minimum 10% of your take-home pay, just save it away straight away. You'd have seen that in my most popular YouTube video.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the first thing that I would say and recommend, because most people don't do it.
Where do you recommend people save the money?
The first thing to do with the savings that you have is set up a 1 month living cost. Just find out exactly how much one month of your living cost is and have that as a buffer, so that if anything goes wrong, boiler breaks, car breaks down, you have that covered and you don't need to go into debt to do that. It's just peace of mind. Mm-hmm. And then pay off your high interest rate debt. Those are the first two things you need to do. High interest rate debt, it's like guaranteed money on the interest you're not paying. So don't start investing until you've paid off your interest above 7%. And then after that, whilst you're building out your emergency fund, 3 months, 6 months, however long you want to, you can start investing at the same time. You don't need to have a fully funded emergency fund before you start investing. I think that would take a very long time. But you do want to at least wait like till you have 3 months at least of a buffer before you make any investment decisions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I'd recommend where to start and the order in which to go in.
Yeah. Have you noticed, I mean, I'm kind of out of touch a little bit more because I've not been in the UK for the past 4 years, but have you noticed it's becoming increasingly more expensive to live there?
In UK?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything has become so much more expensive. I was getting a coffee the other day, and from what I remember, because I work from home, or we work from home quite a lot, so you don't go into the city as much, but they're like £6 in the central London to get a coffee. Yeah. Okay, fine. I know coffees aren't going to change your life or whatever. It's not going to help you pay for a deposit, but everything has got a lot more expensive. Hmm. Yeah, and the wages haven't kept up with it.
Yeah, it's difficult. I've seen...
Did you find that when you went back this?
I noticed when it comes to traveling, like getting a train is just like, seems to be insanely expensive.
How much is a train?
If you were going from like Leeds to London, like you're sometimes paying over £100 like for, like the peak hours, and then again it's like not even on time, there's delays,
it's cheaper to drive,
yeah,
more convenient to drive,
and I mean, of course, rent in London is absolutely insane.
Yeah,
but I think the thing that always I would find interesting about London is the rent would be so expensive, but what you get for the rent is just like, is this it? It's like a very small apartment, like low ceiling, everything's quite squashed. If you have a view, it's probably a brick wall,
yeah,
or of a terraced house. And then, you know, it's raining half the year. And I noticed that London was very, very busy, very full on. A lot of people there, a lot going on.
Not just tourists, just, yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, people move to London because a lot of the jobs, the well-paid jobs, are in London. Mm-hmm. But then with everything else being so much more expensive in the city compared to the rest of the country as well, you're almost, it's kind of written off. Mm-hmm. You almost feel like you're no better off than the rest of the average. Even though you're getting paid more, your cost of living is so high. Everything else is so much more expensive.
Yeah.
But the only way around that is, sadly, to manage your money and make more money. Like, that is always going to, the costs are always going to increase. You could complain about it all you want, but it's never going to go back down again.
Yeah.
So the only way is to focus on what is controllable, which is finding ways to manage, invest, make more money.
If you could go back to your 18 or 19 year old self,
yeah,
so you just finished school,
yeah,
what would you do different
to my 18, 19 year old self if I just finished school? I'm really careful about changing things from my past or saying that I'd change something, because it's easy to say now, oh, if I did something differently back then, I would be in a whole new place right now. But earlier you just said how if you got that AAB and went to Nottingham, mm-hmm, you might have been working for a corporation at the moment and wouldn't be where you are now. So I don't want to take the risk of having changed something at any point in my life before and then potentially not being where I am now, because I'm very grateful and very lucky, mm-hmm, to be in this position. Yeah,
I think especially now the world is very different compared to how it used to be when, you know, we were probably in our early 20s.
Yeah.
Like the opportunities you have now, I feel like in terms of making money, there's a lot more compared to, you know, back in the day, social media wasn't really a thing.
Yeah. It's a lot. And you don't have to take the traditional route anymore. Mm-hmm. You can jump onto social media if you've got experience or you enjoy or have a passion for something and can eloquently teach about it and still make a good living from it. I still do recommend getting a degree, but in many cases, you can still make a lot of money without even having a degree anymore.
What would you say, if, let's say, for example, you didn't go to university, you didn't get a degree.
Yeah.
What are the three main skill sets that you should focus on, which are going to improve your chances of actually earning more money?
Money. I would say negotiation skills, firstly.
Interesting.
Don't you think negotiation is in part of every part of your life?
Yeah. That's interesting. That's in your top three.
Yeah.
I'm pausing because I don't think I'm very good at negotiating.
Oh.
how do you get...
I say that because to make more money, negotiation will always come into it. Whether it's getting a promotion, negotiating with your boss about a promotion, negotiating with your boss about a pay rise, negotiating with a supplier, negotiating with a sponsor about getting more. It always comes in some way or form to make more money. Even not to make money, negotiating with your partner about where you're going for dinner tonight, negotiating with the kids about what time they're going to sleep. So yeah, I feel
you're
like
you're constantly going to get pushed over in your life. You're not going to get very
far. Screw it. Yeah, you'll get nowhere. So I think that would be in the top three. What would you be your top one? Your the first one that you say, I'm throwing it back at you now.
Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it. That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode. To improve my skills of making money, probably understanding and learning the art of selling. So how to sell.
Yeah, I guess to make when you're...
Just the psychology of why is it that people want to buy something?
Mm.
What makes people actually want to part from their money? And just having the slick conversational skills to be able to sell something to someone.
Which even if they don't need it, potentially.
Yeah, which I think I've noticed a lot of people who are really successful in life, you know, they have their own businesses or whatever. Usually at some point in their career or in their life, whether it be late teens, early 20s, they would have worked at a sales center doing sales calls. So all day, every day, they would just have to do back-to-back cold calls trying to sell something,
yeah,
a product or service. And if you're doing that every single day for weeks or months, you get pretty good at understanding what type of delivery or the words that you use which improve your chances of getting somebody to buy that thing from you.
Yeah.
And then later on in life, when it comes to doing whatever it is that you want to do, you know, you then have that ability to convince people to buy it or invest or whatever it might be.
For sure, actually. Because selling would come part in everything that you do as well.
I mean, even in relationships, like, You are, in a sense, sort of kind of selling yourself and be like, hey, you know, I'm a good partner. This is why you should be with me.
This is what I could offer.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Any other ones?
Skills to make money if you don't even have a degree.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a skill, but working with technology instead of against it. I think a lot of people in our age bracket just... at least people I know, just stay away from social media saying, okay, it's not for me. It's not, both past is for the younger generation.
Mm.
Both me and you make a living from social media. If we had that same attitude, it would be a very different life.
Yeah.
So not just with social media, but AI, same thing. There's some people who are like, oh, you know what? I'm going to lose my job because of it. And there's others who's like, who are thinking, okay, I'm a doctor or a dentist. How can I use AI to make more money or to improve what I'm doing? So that's a huge one, especially with the way the world's evolving.
I think there's a lot of people have that thought where they're like, look, I don't want to be a public figure. I don't want to put my face out there. But there is still a way to have, you can build something on social media, have a presence on social media, but be faceless.
Yeah.
Like, I know people who have millions of subscribers of a channel and nobody knows who they are.
Yeah.
So there is always another option. But I try and highlight it to people that, look, everybody is on their phone. Everybody's on social media, worse than ever before.
Oh.
So if you're trying to get their attention to sell something or invest, whatever it might be, like it needs to be on social media somewhere.
Yeah.
And you can go down the route of spending a lot of money on ads, which works, but it costs money. And like, if you're starting something, to have this massive expense on ads to begin with, it's going to kill you as a startup. So your best chances is to have organic content, which is going to reach people.
Because if you're starting up, there's two ways to do it, put in a lot of time or put in a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And the easiest way is probably doing it alongside your job or whatever you're doing, especially if you're starting off and you don't have much money, just put in your time growing something organically.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually being able to monetize that.
Yeah. There's, I think you've made a few videos about this, but I find this quite interesting. So there's two things I want to talk about. First is property. The other is cars. So property, what is your thoughts on buying versus selling? I know you can probably go into a lot of detail.
Yeah.
But I guess very briefly, how would you put it to people when they're trying to decide what they should do?
Buy versus sell? Buy versus
rent. Buy versus rent.
Very briefly, okay. Yeah, because there's so many moving parts to it. But if you are approaching the buy versus rent question, if you are living or want to live in that place for more than 7 years, I would say buy.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many other costs that come with buying a house. Stamp duty, legal fees, accountancy fees, surveyor if you need it. These add up. Even when you're buying a new house, you also have to buy all the new furniture that comes with it. If you're staying there or thinking to move within 3 or 4 years, the cost of all of those eats up into the gain or the equity that you're building on that house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say 7 years. It's long enough to have all those costs kind of average out across that time span. The renting option, if you are building a business or you have a great investment opportunity, or you need the money for something where you can get a better return, then rent, because there's a 20%. Okay, now we've introduced a 1% deposit in the UK, but generally speaking, there is a 15 to 20% deposit that you need to put down for housing. So less than 7 years, or if you need the money for something else, then rent. Also, if you put it into a tracker or an index fund that tracks the S&P 500, you're probably going to get more from that than you would in the gain in property, the way the market's going at the moment.
So am I right in guessing that you haven't purchased a property yet?
I have. But I also do, a lot of the properties that I've bought were at the start of my career.
Properties?
Yeah.
Plural. Nice.
But they were all in, as soon as I started, first couple of years in banking was just a shit show. I was spending everything, but you could get a 2-bed flat in North London in Enfield or Edmonton for like £180,000.
What year was this?
2015.
Yeah.
Now that same place is £400,000, and with all the regulations, the tide is against landlords at the moment. So unless you're doing something creative, a simple buy-to-let property is, in my opinion, just not the way to go right now.
You think that's just London, or you think worldwide?
Yeah, London. I'm not familiar with the rest of
I think it's definitely London. It's a trending thing here in Dubai to either, I know a lot of people are buying off plan, the cash they have, waiting a few years and then selling it, and they can almost double their money. Because I think especially past few years, a lot of people who come to Dubai that have money and they just want to move into something straight away.
I've seen a lot of properties here though sit on the market for a good while. I'm not familiar with it, but is it just because there's specific areas that people are after?
I think London is more safe and reliable because the areas tend to just stay the same.
Yeah.
They're not changing over time.
Right.
And it's very like central, like there is the center of London and then it goes out.
Yeah.
Dubai, you have like different spots and areas, which they kind of become not so trendy and not so popular anymore. They build a brand new resort. That seems to be like the new place everybody wants to be. There's always, I would say, on the safe side, if you're by water or if you're on the coast, like this place, like it's always going to retain its value. And I think most importantly, the closer you are to the water, the better. So nobody is going to build something out in front of you. I think that's, in the UK, there's a lot of red tape as to what you can build and you can't build. You can't build something over a certain height. That's why everyone's going down into cellars. And then even if they want to build skyscrapers, like there's literally so many regulations and processes they have to go through. And most of them don't even get the green light anyway. Whereas in Dubai, they're just like, yeah, go for it, put it up. And then they put it up and like, you have spent millions on this property because of this amazing view of maybe it's the Burj Khalifa or maybe it's the water. And then they're like, yeah, we're going to build another one in front of it. And there's like nothing you can do about it. And there's actually, I knew of people who have villas on the Palm. They spent millions on these villas on the Palm and had a beautiful view of the marina. And then they started building Dubai Harbour. So all these skyscrapers were being built, which completely destroy the view. And to me, the most important thing when it comes to a property is the view. I don't want anybody messing with my view. So I need to have some kind of guarantee that at least I'm going to be able to hold on to that view long into the future.
As long as you can. That's why the closest you are. Yeah. There's photos of, I don't know if you've seen it on Google or they're everywhere, but of Dubai literally 20 years ago versus now. That's, this skyline did not exist.
Yeah. It's
building left, right and centre. It's just not very... not many regulations, or it's not hard to get planning, clearly.
My approach when it comes to property is I don't mind getting into it, investing it, but I don't want anything that's going to give me headache or stress. And the people say, some people say to me, oh, no, it'll be fine. You can just hire people to run it for you. You can hire estate agents to sell it out to people. And I'm like, it's still not as straightforward as that. Like there is always some element of headache, and I'm at a point right now where I don't want to deal with that headache.
Yeah.
And even though it is potentially a lucrative avenue that you can go down, but I also have a lot of opportunities at this point in time, which can also provide me with pretty lucrative opportunities with less headache. So I'm going to go for that. Yeah. And this money, which I have saved, I could put it on property or I could put it into this thing, which is going to be realistically a lot more lucrative.
Better return and probably shorter in time as well. Yeah. You probably make the money in 2 years, 3 years versus property. You'd have to hold it for a long time to see the 18-year cycle.
I think a lot of people who are listening just need to be aware that the world has changed, particularly from like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So all the parents saying, oh, you should do this, you should buy a house, you know, that's not quite the same anymore. And then, it's... you'll find there's a lot of not so honest people who are saying, oh, this is what you should do. Like, I'm an estate agent. Like, trust me, this is the right thing to do. And then, you know, of course they want that because they're getting big fat commission off the sale.
Of course. Of course. Like, think about who's giving you the advice and what their vested interest is in it. Mm-hmm. I always personally think it's nice owning your own home. Mm-hmm. Just having that comfort of knowing this is yours. You could do whatever you want. You could change it around. Don't have to ask permission from anyone. So there's always that psychological comfort of having a home. But at the same time, if you're moving around, if you don't even know where you are, then rent, because I don't see a home as an investment anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the way to look at buying a house to think, okay, what's the best investment strategy for this? No, just find something you like and live in it for a long time.
Is the properties you have in the UK, is that doing pretty good?
They are about to be remortgaged, which won't be so good. that's why I say it. They were doing great. There's a lot of social housing that I do. Mm-hmm. So you get a guaranteed rent from the government, from the council. So even if it's empty, because I've got a 5-year contract with the council, local council, I still get money on it. So that's been quite nice. And there's a lot of ones like that I do. So I get universal credit if it's someone who can't afford it and the government will give the money for it, or I have a agreement with the local council where they say, okay, we'll give you a set amount. Just make sure it's ours for 5 years. And then my agreement is with the government. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything high end because I feel like even with my place at home, if I'm traveling and I want to Airbnb it out, I don't want that headache of my flat being touched or messed up. Just no.
Yeah.
So I'd rather just have it have the bare minimum and not take on too much hassle if something breaks or isn't doing well. That's the way I see it.
What's your thoughts on buying versus leasing a car?
Buying versus leasing. What do you usually do? Curious.
I buy.
Okay, yeah. That's what I was...
But I'm not a normal person, I don't think.
For people listening...
I've never bought something brand new.
Okay, perfect. Because what I was going to say is the way to always go with a car is buy it outright, if you can, secondhand, and 3 to 5 year old. That is like the sweet spot where it's depreciated enough at someone else's expense and it won't depreciate as much when you have it. If you are someone who doesn't mind making the less financial savvy choice and wants a nice, cool car every couple of years, but is happy to pay with the extra cost that comes with it, then rent. That's the mindset or the approach to take those two with. Mm-hmm. When it comes to rent, in the UK, there's different ways to rent. There's lease, PCP, getting a bank loan. The way to approach that, so it's like kind of like a graph. The way to approach that is think about how long you're going to have that car for and what the price is for owning it for that specific period. So the total cost of ownership. Figure out what the total cost of ownership is, calculate those out. Again, got a whole video on how to calculate it, and then go for the cheapest one. Mm. That is the mindset I would recommend.
I think, I mean, this is probably more applicable to men because of social media. Everybody seems to want to show off these days.
Yeah.
No doubt they'll want to get as flashy a car as possible.
Yeah.
So realistically, what can somebody afford? Because I know some people have this way of thinking where if you can buy it over 5 times or if you can buy it over 10 times, then realistically, okay, yeah, you can afford it. But if you're, you know, spending half of your money on a car, obviously that's not a very sensible purchase.
Yeah. There's a recommended percentages for this. So it's 20 to 30% of your take home pay you can spend towards a car. 20% if you're being quite conservative and you're like, okay, like I think that's quite on the low end. 30% if you're like, actually, you know what? I'm a bit of a petrol head. I like my cars. That's a recommended, but I don't like saying, okay, this is the percentage you have to stick by. Just think of it as, okay, that goes into your fixed costs, your needs. And that needs category as a whole should be 60% of your take-home pay. Doesn't matter if it's 20, 30% towards a car. Doesn't matter if you want to spend 40% towards your car, but 20% on everything else. Just make sure that that category of all your needs is under 60% of your take-home. Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it. There are different guidelines, like the 24-10 rule, the 20% rule, the 30% rule, but I think that's the least restrictive and a way where you can enjoy your car without thinking, oh, like I can't enjoy life and I'm always saving and scrimping and can't even buy the things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. That's my recommendation.
Yeah. I think as I've got older, as I've spoken to more sensible people, I've realized the importance of just tracking my finances, my spending, because... you know, you can get to a position where you're doing quite well, where you just assume that on a month-to-month basis, like everything's going to be good. Mm. You know, you're going to have this money lying about. And I've experienced myself where I have got accustomed to a certain lifestyle and I've been like, right, okay, I've got money, everything's good. I'm going to hire more staff. So I was just hiring more people to make my life easier so that I could just have more free time and either enjoy my life more or just do more of the things which I want to do. And then I got in a bit of a trickier situation because now my overheads were a lot higher than they used to be. And then it meant that I was kind of forced to keep doing the things which I was doing so that I could cover all my costs, when actually what I wanted to do was make a little bit of a transition between, okay, I want to stop doing this so that I can do this. So let's say, for example, for me, this is probably a few years ago where I was sick of doing like brand sponsors, you know, whether it be working with supplement companies and things like that. I said to myself, look, I don't want to do this anymore. So I just stopped. And then I got into this situation where there was a couple of months where all this sponsorship money, which is pretty good, completely came to a standstill. And I was like, oh, like fuck, my overheads are still the same.
Right.
And if I keep up, this is like, I'm going to get myself in a pretty tricky situation.
Yeah.
So like, thankfully everything was fine, but I noticed what I didn't do properly was just keep a track of everything, my spending, my expenses, more importantly. Is there any, is there like any particular app or method which you use to keep a track of everything?
How do you do it on a monthly basis, or do you do it quarterly, or how often do you do it? Okay, monthly, yeah. I find a lot of people do not do it monthly. They say they'll do it, even me, to be fair. As an accountant, as a finance background, I say I'll try and do it monthly. There are so many months where I'm just like, oh, I can't be bothered, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. I really take it seriously. Every December, I do my whole year's worth. So just this time around, when I was flying back from Dubai to London, that 7-hour flight, I did nothing but downloaded all my statements, put it all into one tracker, an Excel file, saw exactly where my income was coming from, exactly where my expenses were coming from, where I was spending. Mm-hmm. And it helps because firstly, it told me where I was making the most money. So I'm like, okay, I got to double down on that. I did not realize that I was making more on that than I was on that. Expenses, I'm spending way too much on getting taxis everywhere. I'm getting Uber Eats all the time or Kareem all the time. Something needs to change there. But in other areas, I'm like, I don't mind spending on that. But doing that one exercise in December made me a lot more mindful for the coming year. So I've only done it. I always say, just do it. If you're going to do it, not going to do it at all, just do it once for the year. Mm-hmm. Ideally, twice a year or every quarter would be great. But even I fall behind every month. You can use apps like YNAB, which is good. But again, most people don't keep on top of it.
Well, I almost relate it to like tracking calories. So for somebody who has absolutely no idea what food they're eating, they're probably not getting the results they want. So if they spend a bit of time actually just tracking, okay, so this is the food I'm eating. This is how much protein I'm having, how much carbs, how much fat, and overall calories. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, whoa, I'm overeating here. Or like, I'm not eating enough protein, or my fats are way too high.
Yeah.
So then you have some understanding where you're like, okay, I need to address this and fix this. And then I'm going to get the results I want. It's the same thing when it comes to actually tracking, because if you have no idea what you're spending, how much you're saving, and how much money is coming in, then you'll probably get to a point where you're like, hang on a second, where's all my money gone?
Exactly.
Whereas if you just take a minute to just lay everything out and be like, okay, this is where I'm spending it, this is where it's coming in, you will figure out that most of the time you're spending too much money on stupid shit.
Yeah, absolutely. And come to think about it, maybe I already know I have a very good idea of what I'm spending and making month on month. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like I need to do a regimented tracker. But if you are spending without thinking, or like you don't know where you're earning, yeah, monthly, you got to know where you are to decide where you're going to go.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't even know what direction you're going in. You could be heading backwards for, you know.
Yeah. I feel like you're probably someone who hasn't really made a huge amount of mistakes when it comes to finances, because you're so well educated in that topic. But are there any mistakes which you have made in the past where you look back and think, oh, that was not a wise move?
Two come to mind, actually. Firstly, I made the stupid mistake of my first paycheck in banking went straight towards a white convertible Audi.
Nice.
Yeah. And that
in central London as well.
In like the suburbs of London, to be fair. But that stayed with me. That payment stayed with me for years, which is why I'm so adamant to be like, just wait, don't buy your car, don't spend so much. Like, think about it before you buy it. That was annoying. That was a mistake. Second biggest mistake I made when it comes to money is staying at my first job for too long. There is a study that shows people who stay in the same company for more than 2 years on average make 50% less over their lifetime. And that stat was based on a 10-year horizon. Careers are going to be longer than 10 years, but the longer you're working, the bigger that difference. If you're staying in the same company, you're getting on average a 3 to 5% pay rise. Whereas if you're moving and switching jobs, you can expect between 10 to 20% of a pay rise. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at two people in the same place, one's moving around, one's staying in the same company, fast forward 10 years, they're in a whole different league. And yeah, sure, people could turn around and say, oh, but I'm really happy and I'm really comfortable with my job and I'm enjoying it and work-life balance. If you're fine with that statistic, then yeah, cool. Mm. But if you haven't got a pay rise for the last 3 years or not a sizable pay rise, then it's time to move.
It's unlikely the boss or the manager is going to be like, hey, do you want some more money?
Yeah, let me pay you what you deserve. Yeah. No chance. And I got a zero. There was a year at Deutsche Bank where, well, I was told it was all employees got a flat zero, no pay rise. Mm. Whether it happened to other people or not, I don't know, because British people never speak about how much they make. But that meant I made with inflation less that year than I did the previous year. Mm-hmm. Just move around. And so many people have been in the same company for 8, 9 years. And I'm thinking, oh, you're underpaid. Unless you're getting, your boss is fighting for you every couple of years and you're getting promoted and you're getting your pay rises, great. But for the majority of people, they're just comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that costs you. That's a financial mistake because that costs you more than a handbag or a pair of trainers.
Yeah, for sure. I think you either have to be really kind of ruthless and driven to want to keep getting that promotion and that pay rise. But I feel like most people are very complacent.
Yeah.
And are either afraid to ask or maybe just the opportunities are not there in that firm.
In that firm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But some people just like being comfortable. And if that's it, then you can't expect to make a lot of money if you're happy with just staying in the same place.
Yeah.
It's a paradox.
When this is something, I don't know how much advice you can give on this topic, but I know a couple of my friends have done this. When it comes to relationships, money can often be something which can make and break a relationship. So I think the first thing I want to talk about is, do you think couples should have shared bank accounts?
It's really different for different couples. But what I like to recommend is having your account, having my account, and then having our account. Mm-hmm. So our account is for all our joint expenses, rent or mortgage, Wi-Fi bill, groceries, all of that comes under our account. My account is for all my spending, back massages, pampering, girls' night dinner. And then your account is your £200 golf round or your car or whatever it is. We don't have a say on what our respective bank accounts are doing, but we together have our account that we are both contributing towards. And then we also have our future account, which is our retirement, our savings, our future home, our future car. And I think that works in a really good way where you still have autonomy and independence with your own finances, but you're also building a life together. It's not completely separate. You still have a common goal and you're working on a life that you're building with someone else. So
would you come to some sort of an agreement as to how much money you would both put
towards
the joint account? Because I know this is very dependent upon the situation. Maybe you are, you know, you could be the male, it could be the female, you could be the sole earner, in which case I guess things are a little bit different. But if you are starting a relationship and you're in a position where both of you are earning money, you are in a situation where I guess you can kind of both contribute and work together as a team.
So I don't believe in equality when it comes to money and relationships. Equality being you earn 300,000, I earn 50,000, and we both split the rent 50-50. Mm-hmm. I do believe, however, if you earn 300,000, I earn 50,000, we take a percentage of what we earn and we put it into the rent. We say, okay, this is same percentage of my income and your income, and we both take on that same financial burden. That, I feel like, works a lot better in a relationship because no one's feeling like they can't afford something. And even in my relationship, we were both earning different amounts at different points in our relationship. When we were together, I was earning a bit more, then he was earning a bit more than I was, than he was. And so I never want to turn around and say, okay, you got to be putting in more now. And then 10 years down the line, the tables turn and I can't afford it. So in a relationship, in all facets of a relationship, together you need to come up with 100. It could be 50, it could be 50-50 in some cases if it's together, 60-40, 70-30, 80-20. But as long as you've communicated it, getting to 100 at the end of the day is what matters. And so you're both pulling in the part without one of you feeling like, man, I can't afford this. And
did you notice any change in the relationship when you were earning more money?
No.
Okay, that's good.
Not at all.
That's good.
Well, what's your view on this?
In what sense?
I
would always prefer to be in the position where I'm the one earning more. And I think in a lot of cases that's been the situation. But I would like to understand how I would behave differently. Let's say, for example, if I got into a relationship with someone famous. Okay, let's say, for example, 10 times the amount of followers I have, and she's maybe earning 5 to 10 times more than me. How would that make me feel? How would I behave? How would I change? I don't know, because I've never been in that situation. I think I would be cool with it. In fact, you know what it would do? It would be extremely motivating for me to step my game up, because I would want to get to her level. So I would be doing everything for me to also get to that level. And I also think, I'm sure that she would also help and support me to get to that level. And if I am doing that, then maybe it's just going to make the relationship even better. I certainly wouldn't be bitter and jealous and weird. But if I was getting emasculated or disrespected, then I would probably have issues with that, I think.
How would you think you feel emasculated? What would she have to do for you to feel a certain way? Kind of making comments or saying, like, you need to work
more. I don't know, it could be like a dinner and, you know, I'll be like, okay, I'll get the bill. Yeah. And then she'd go, oh, no, don't worry, I've already got it. If I was with all of my mates, they'd be like, oh, interesting.
Yeah. I think if you have an issue with her earning more money than you, then you need to be willing to step up and make up for the difference.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, one middle-class income was enough to sustain a very comfortable lifestyle. A family home, 4-bedroom house, 2 children, family, pet, and a couple of holidays a year. Yeah, sure. But now one income, for most cases, isn't enough to sustain a lifestyle of a certain level. So if she's doing her part to fund that lifestyle, then you've got to support her or work with her. Because if you're not, then you need to fund the gap.
Yeah.
But together, you could work it out. The best bit is just saying, okay, I want to support you and I want to do what you're doing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're a power couple.
And what I've noticed as well, just from this previous experience of dating and just observations I make, usually the women who are doing extremely well financially, they don't really tend to be looking out for guys who are not doing as well financially. They're usually looking for an equal or someone who's doing better. Am I wrong in saying that?
I think, and I'm just going to, it might be completely generalized and I have no idea what I'm talking about, but if you are someone who's earning a lot of money, you come with a lot of ambition and drive. And so you might not be looking for someone who's earning a lot of money, but you might be looking for someone who's got the equal level of passion and ambition and drive. And that usually, when you're good at that and you're really passionate about what you do, that comes with money. So it might not necessarily, if it's a huge difference, I do think it might be, and we're talking about, I don't know, say 40K versus 400K. That is too far of a difference and your lifestyles will completely not match up. But if you're both earning a decent amount and at that point it's all about like, okay, it's not making ends meet, but just seeing how we can upgrade our lifestyle, I don't think it would completely say, turn someone away to be like, oh, they're not even meeting my level. But that's just coming from my view on it. Do you find that you might not consider someone who's making more money than you because who looks like they've got everything intact or really like driven because you want to feel like the man in the relationship? Like it's a bit of
I think it would be harder to impress her. I think somebody who has, whether they've already been treated to that ultra luxury lifestyle or they can actually be in a position where they can afford it for themselves, it gets hard to, you're probably at a point where you can't even match that. Like you can't spend enough money to be in a position where she's going to be sort of happy with this, you know, lifestyle that you're trying to provide for her because she already has it. So I think that's potentially a problem.
But do you ever fear that if that's the avenue that you're going for, that there may be a different interest?
Very quickly, guys, I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you taking supplements? And if you are, do you have any idea if you're taking the right supplements in the right amounts? You see, the more that I discovered about the importance of micronutrient supplementation and the adverse health effects of micronutrient deficiencies, I would constantly ask myself the same thing. I would go into supplement stores, load up on bottles of micronutrients and pop pills daily without really knowing if they were doing me any good or not. That's when I decided to try out Bionic. Since 2021, I've been getting my blood work done with them every 3 to 4 months. Once the blood test has been analyzed, they would put together a customized micronutrient formula tailored specifically for me. And this would last me for 3 to 4 months until I got my blood work done again. And since then, I've honestly never looked back. If you are also serious about performing at your best, preventing development of diseases and maximizing your overall health and well-being, I highly recommend you give it a try. And they've recently introduced Bionic Go, which is a fraction of the price, where all you need to do is just fill in a questionnaire online without the need of a blood test. If you want to find out more or give them a try, head over to bionic.com, and you can use my exclusive referral code BQMikeThurston for a discount on your first order. Let's get back to the episode. Possibly. Again, this is it's so fascinating because I've never been in that situation. And yeah. I'm curious to see what it'd be like. I think it would be fine. I think I would just be so motivated and driven to really step my game up. And I'm sure I would get there.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
I think that's the way to approach it.
Yeah.
And also there might be another time where she takes a step back and you're like, okay, now I'm killing it.
Yeah.
And then you're just dream team.
Yeah. Do you think couples should be completely open and honest with their finances?
It's not like, okay, tell me how much you earn, but 100% on the other things. Tell me if you have a bad credit score, we can't get a mortgage together. Tell me how much debt you have. Tell me like what your spending habits are. Money is such a huge part of a relationship. So many marriages end up in divorce because of money, that if you've caught up or if you started on the wrong foot and you're going to get married to this person, that's a very long journey to take when you haven't even been honest with them. Mm-hmm. What would you not want to be, or what would people not want to be honest about? What would people want to hide? I don't think you necessarily need to tell them how much you make from the outset. Yeah.
For a guy, there's two approaches, particularly if you're in the early stages of a relationship.
Yes.
You could be super honest and even over-exaggerate to try and get that woman to be more attracted to you.
For sure.
I personally wouldn't want to go down that route because then I'm thinking, oh, she's only with me for the money. Like I would try to be very low key about it and not mention it. Of course,
you probably know
the lifestyle, the apartment, the way you live, it would be an indicator that he's probably doing all right. But I wouldn't want to be completely transparent. I think especially if you are doing extremely well and you say like, oh, hey, look, like this is literally how much money I have. Then they may start to have the expectations that like, oh, he's got all this money. So it's okay for me to ask for this. Well, this is like, oh, it's okay, you can afford it. So can we go to Louis Vuitton, please? I want to get this bag. And then one bag, two bag, 20 bags. And then it can kind of turn into this downward spiral. But and if I'm in the position where I want to know a little bit more about how much she earns, but only because I just want to know, like, if she does need any help with anything, I'm willing to give that help. Or if she wants to contribute, or, you know, say, for example, if she says, she's trying to be nice, and she's like, I'll get the food for this evening, but we might have gone to a really nice restaurant, and the bill might be £300. I want to know if this is, like, if that's a lot of money for her. I don't want her to be, you know, really straining herself to do this nice gesture and pay for this dinner. Because I know she means well, but I really don't care. I would much prefer for me to just pay it. If it means that she's going to be taking a big hit financially from trying to do this nice thing. So I would like to know. I don't have to know the details, but I would like to know. And also I've been in situations before, it was funny, this is Dubai, classic Dubai, where when women are, they live in this very good life. So I always do this test. Like if they're going out to these fancy dinners, you know, they're traveling like, oh God, taking a picture in for like business class. Interesting. So I want to know where this money has come from.
Okay.
Because if it is self-funded and she's a grinder, she's done very well, then I'm like, okay, I know she's doing well for herself.
Yeah.
But if it comes off from the outside that she's not really working, she's not doing anything,
right,
then I'm like, okay, where's the money coming from? And usually, more often than not, she's got a sugar daddy or she's got a couple of sugar daddies. Which is kind of something you need to know if you're thinking about getting in a relationship with this person.
Oh, 100%.
And it's Yeah, let's just say when I first came here, I was naive.
How did you approach the conversations with the...
I would, there would be the, before anything happened, I would do a little bit of a scan on social media just to see like what they get up to.
Yeah.
In a non-weird, stalky way.
Yeah.
And then I would just put the question out there. I'd be like, oh, okay, so like, what do you do for a living? And then you can tell, you know, if they're actually doing something legit, which is financially pretty rewarding, then everything kind of adds up.
Yeah.
If they say, like, oh, I'm just like, do a bit of modeling, or say, oh, real estate agent, it's just like, ah.
Well, the real estate agents here make a killing. What are you on about?
Well, the ones who are actually real estate agents.
Right, okay.
Because yeah. A lot of them have that as a front. So it depends.
Yeah. And then I feel those conversations need to happen really early.
And it might just be the case that they come from a very wealthy family. So that it's actually, that you know, they're getting a big chunk of an allowance from the parents.
And would that be an issue to you?
No, no, no.
Okay.
If anything, that's... I would prefer that to be the case instead of her being with a load of previous boyfriends who were multi-millionaires, billionaires.
Yeah. Because then you get one impression from her and think that...
Well, she's had all these really high-end experiences with a partner before.
Yeah.
Whereas if she has the money to do it herself... Maybe she's gone and done those things, but she hasn't done it with a partner before. So at least I can then, we can do these things together, but it's a new experience for her because she's never done it with anyone else before.
Okay.
So this is the thing. I don't expect them to be earning loads of money.
Okay, yeah.
Hey, it's cool if they do, but yeah. I like to know that they have a job. First of all, because it means they're occupied. They're not just sitting around on TikTok all day. Because I don't have time to entertain you. Like, I've got my own stuff going on. So you need to have a hobby or some sort of a job which is going to keep you occupied. And it's nice to see somebody who has a passion.
Yeah, sure.
But secondly, if they are earning money, it doesn't mean they, like, you know, if we're going to have children and start a family, I probably don't want you to have a job. I'd rather you, you know, when it gets to the point if you're raising 2 or 3 kids,
yeah.
I'd rather you be the mother than trying to juggle being a mother and okay. having a job. But I like the fact that because you have a job and you're earning money, it just shows that you have the ability to earn money. Like, you have enough skill sets to go out there in the real world and make a living for yourself, which I like. I respect that.
Yeah.
And I like that. Like, I wouldn't necessarily want to be with someone who is completely clueless and has never worked a day in their life.
Right.
Because it's just like, it's, I think when you get into a relationship and you're married, you know, you have to work as a team. So I need to know that I'm going to be with someone who can, has a bit of common sense, who knows how to get shit done. You know, maybe I have like a really busy few days with work. And I'm like, can you look after the kids and go and do all these things? Like, can you take them to school? Can you drive? Can you do this favor for me and organize this for me? Or even, let's say, for example, I'm super stressed out. And this has happened to me before where I've been in a relationship and I do everything. I do like all the planning. I pay for it all.
Yeah.
But then I also book the flights. I plan where we're going. And then when we get there, I am also responsible for finding the restaurants, booking the transportation. Okay. And I'm like, I need some help here.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing all this vacation shit at the same time as trying to run multiple businesses.
Right.
So it's extremely overwhelming. So I want to be with a team player. So somebody that's going to help me out and make my life a little bit easier and have that ability to do, not run a business. I don't care if you can run a business, but at least, you know.
Do the other things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're happy to say, you know what? You don't need to work that hard. I will pull in and do that part. I've got you covered.
Yeah.
But just help me out in these different areas.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
You can't then go for someone who's like a very career driven person and then be like, oh, I don't expect you to work in your job.
Yeah.
Because I want to bend, because she might be like, well, this is my life. Yeah. I really enjoy what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I think if you've got a leg to stand on and say, actually, no, I make enough money for both of us, and you can chill out and lounge around by the pool and do some of the home stuff, then you're both working together to make it work.
Yeah. It's been an eye opener. And I think particularly with some relationships I've had in the past, you know, I've just known it's not going to work out. Yeah. Like, I always imagine, okay, so what's it going to be like when there's kids in the picture? Like, how is this going to work? Because we have to work as a team. And sometimes there's some people who just don't have a work ethic.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's tricky.
It's a non-starter.
Yeah. So I want to go just back quickly to your YouTube channel and everything you've got going on there. What are your plans going into the future with everything?
Oh, plans for the future. Try and see how many more people I can reach. It's nothing extravagant. I don't have anything lined up, but really just continue doing what I'm doing now. See different ways I could explore it. Try and post more on Instagram. That's what trying to put my content on different platforms, because right now I've neglected everything but YouTube. But it's just my style is I'd focus on one thing and then I'll move on to the next and focus on that. So,
and you don't really have a big team, do you?
I have 5 people now.
Oh, you have 5 people. Yeah. Okay.
So growing.
And you've launched a course recently, have you?
I launched it. It's launched a while ago. So it launched in June, but it comes out every couple of months. I'm not sure when it'll release. I'll open the doors again in a few months as well. But it's all about money, debt, credit score, investing, managing your money, like a one-stop shop for everything that you need to know in one place.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Thank you. Well, I know you have to rush off, so we'll end it here. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. And I do recommend everybody who has not come across your videos before or gone to your channel, check it out. Like, I think you have 77 videos right now. And even I was thinking this to myself, like, if I just sit there and watch every video, I have a feeling I'm going to be in a much better situation, you know, in terms of my financial awareness moving forward. And it's all for free, which is the most outrageous part about it.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. And it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.